Everybody's gone out of their mind.
Hello and welcome to episode 66 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies, and this week we are talking about two pretty big ones, Pitch Perfect 2 and Mad Max. I'm Perry Nemroff, and I was so distracted. Here are my co-hosts, Christy Pochko. Say hello.
Hey, everybody!
That's normal. And Angie Han.
Hello.
Alrighty, so we're just going to jump into Pitch Perfect 2 like nothing's wrong. And I'm taking that one. Here's the synopsis. After a humiliating command performance at Lincoln Center, the Bard and Bellas enter an international competition that no American group has ever won in order to regain their status and right to perform. So basically what happens, which you probably saw in the trailer, is that Rebel Wilson is like flying and they're performing for the president and her pants rip and she, flashes everybody. I'm slightly obsessed with Pitch Perfect. I have watched it over and over again, and every time it's on, I can't stop watching it, and I adore the shit out of that movie. Pitch Perfect 2 is a lot of fun, but it's a bad movie. It's like,
and it was on your most anticipated of the year, like to the point where was high up on our summer list.
It's actually making me reassess the whole idea of my best worst movie of the year list, because I actually put Pitch Perfect on there because, I mean, I found that the plot of that movie, like, you know, pretty formulaic, and that's kind of why it went on there. But Pitch Perfect compared to Pitch Perfect 2 is, like, fucking, like, high-quality filmmaking, and this is kind of, like forced comedic garbage. The comedy was probably the worst part of this movie. The performances are fantastic. I love the singing parts, but, you know, I want to say about maybe 30% of the jokes were really funny and things you might want to quote later on, which I think the other movie is probably at like 80%, if not higher.
It felt to me like a pale imitation of the first Pitch Perfect. Like, I can see, like, that they have the same kind of, you know, DNA. Like, you can kind of see, like, okay, it's the same characters, it's the same kind of appeal, but somehow, like, it feels lazier, it feels sloppier, the jokes don't land, the characters aren't as well drawn, the dialogue is less sharp.
I don't know if lazy is the right word. I think
I would definitely call it lazy.
I wouldn't call it lazy because I think that while they were there, I get the impression that the people making this movie thought the things that they were doing were really funny. And they're just not.
I think they thought they were having a good time. But I don't think they thought, I can't believe that they looked at this script and were like, this is a good script. This is a garbage script. First off, the fact that they were like, okay, Pitch Perfect 2. Now we have the girls from the Bard and Bellas are at the top of their game. And not only are they at the top of their game, they've been at the top of their game for 3 years. We're told that they won the Nationals 3 times now. So they need to figure out a way to make them underdogs again. And the way they go about it, as they said, is that Rebel Wilson's pants split and she flashes her twat to the entire nation to the shame of everything. And like, so it starts off with this really weird note of just body and slut shaming for like 15 minutes. And like, people are just being like, oh God, it's so gross. She showed her vagina. Da, da, da. Like, whatever. And then like, so they have to go through this whole convoluted process just to make them be outcasts again, which just felt really weird. And then they do the same thing with Becca, where like Becca's problem the first time was that she had a hard time actually giving a shit about anything. And this time she's graduating, so it makes sense that she has other interests, but they still kind of want to make it seem like that's a problem. So they like build up this whole plot line about how Becca's having a hard time giving a shit about internationals because she has like an internship. And it just feels really forced and, you know, very uninspired. And then, like, on top of that, it just feels like they kept wedging in, like, oh, remember this character and also this character. But none of the characters experience any growth since the last movie. In fact, one of them is now a 7-year senior because they just didn't want to get rid of Brittany Snow. And I like Brittany Snow, but it doesn't make any sense that she's there.
Does she ever even, like, come to terms with that in the movie? I don't think they ever address it again later
on. She says that she's going to pass Russian Lit.
Oh, I guess the campfire scene. They kind of. I thought that they were going to kind of have her graduate and send her on her way as a lawyer, because remember that scene where they were standing in front of the board? She was kind of like reading something as though she had like an added insight into what was in the fine print. So I'm like, she's going to be a lawyer and that's going to be the fix here. And like, that never even happened.
But nobody gets to grow. And on top of that, not only do people not get to grow, they've like reduced them to something that's just not interesting at all. Like, you know, there's one part where Rebel Wilson's character says something about, like, we're such a diverse group of women. And I was like, are you, though? Because it's a bunch of white chicks. And then it's, like, one Latina girl, one black girl who's also gay. So, you know, as they say in Art Archer, that's a diversity double whammy. And then you've got the Asian girl who just says weird stuff all the time.
She is my favorite, though.
She's hilarious.
She's the best part of the movie. Everything, it's like the same gag as the first movie, yeah. But everything is funny all over again.
But I think what Christy's saying is, like, it doesn't feel like anyone has anything beyond that. Part of the reason why that gag worked in the first movie, and she's still funny, the lines that she says are still funny, but part of why I liked it in the first movie is that it's just this, like, one flavor of, like, what the fuck in a movie that otherwise kind of makes sense. Whereas in this one, everyone is kind of like her, where they just have the one shtick that they're harping on over and over, to the point that, as Christy pointed out, even Becca, one of the few characters who has an arc, it's just exactly the same arc. They just took her back to square one so that she could repeat the steps. And the other one about the other thing about this movie is that I feel like it kind of like sprawls all over the place. Whereas the first movie, like the kind of, you know, she joins the a cappella group and they're trying to make a comeback. Like that was kind of a steady line that you just keep returning to through the movie. So everything that happens in that movie kind of comes in service of that. In this movie, it's just like, oh, they, you know, they fucked up. So now they need to like make a comeback. Also, the a cappella team might be disbanded completely. Also, there's a new girl who is here for no reason, played by Hailee Steinfeld. Also, Rebel Wilson and Adam Devine have a thing now. And it was just like all over
they
the place.
They had a thing in the
so
first
sloppy
movie.
To me.
Exactly.
Well, their journey was much more defined in the first movie. It's like they started out and you kind of saw what they were losing. Here, the weird thing with the growth for me in this one was the whole thing with the props, too. It's like we never saw why kind of leaned on using that. And they made such a big deal where the commenters every time were always like, oh, there goes the props. And now, like, what the hell is going on? And then all of a sudden they lost that because they had a discussion at the campfire. I don't know.
Well, also they
I
set
really
the one girl
that.
On fire because the props went bad. But, like, and that's another thing. The commentators, I mean, the stuff they're saying is, again, such old shticky stuff. It's not funny. It's not interesting. I know some people were offended by the ladyboy jokes that the one guy makes saying they were transphobic.
Well, every time he said something, I wanted to, like, crawl under my seat and die.
Because his whole joke is that he's misogynistic. But, like, yeah, it's like his whole joke is that he's misogynistic. But it's like, I don't know. It's again, it's really one note, and can we have any other flavor to this character?
Well, the problem that I think the reason why it didn't work this time around is because, one, there was a lot more of it, and two, the movie overall was super mean-spirited. It's like, before, when he was dropping those jokes, it was in some, like, you know, fun-loving, sisterly-type vibe stuff. Now, in this movie, everybody's, like, freaking nasty. I mean, Becca walks around with a scowl on her face the entire time. Her boss at her internship is like mean.
I
like
him,
the boss. So her boss is.
I thought they got a little too carried away with that.
No, I liked him. He was played by Keegan-Michael Key, and like it's her new internship. And one of the running gags with him throughout the movie is that there is this other intern named Dax that he hates, and he's so mean to Dax. He's actually not that mean to Becca. He's kind of like harsh, but not really like mean.
Yeah, he's kind of weirdly supportive.
But the great thing is that it works because Dax completely deserves it because he's a terrible, incompetent person. And that was actually one of the few parts of the movie that felt genuinely new and funny to me. And
it's funny. I got sick of that. After a while.
Oh, wow. I like that too. Because it felt like something beyond just the same joke again and again. Even though he's showing up and repeatedly making fun of Dax, it's with like new flavors. Though the Dax thing is just that he's basically like an entitled hipster. But like, you know, that was interesting to me. I also liked, there was something else I liked about
that. Back to the mean stuff though. Then there's like all the verbal sparring between the Bellas and Dust Sound Machine. Like just like constant name calling. And then there was like another mean, the whole relationship between Adam Devine and Rebel Wilson's character is kind of like finding romance through the two of them verbally abusing each other.
Yeah.
It was just too much for one movie.
I guess people really liked Adam Devine and Rebel Wilson in the first one. I think they're both overrated as comedians, so I don't get it. But, like, we saw them get together in the first movie, so I don't understand how it's a victory seeing them get together this time. And
I
then
think it's... I think that plotline, to me, felt, like, emblematic of the problems of the movie as a whole, which is that it was this one element in, like, the stew that was the first movie that kind of worked in small doses, but here they decided to bump it up to a major storyline, and I feel like especially the storyline that it was, it doesn't work for those characters. I liked it in the first movie because it was just a small part of it. And it's like the same thing with the commentators that Perry was talking about. And it's like the same thing with like that Asian girl with her weird non sequiturs. Like all of these things worked fine in the first movie because they were small parts of a solid whole. In this one, it's just like, well, we don't have a solid whole, so let's just like drive all of these up to the next level and hope that that's enough. And it's not.
Yeah, because they try to act like it's about internationals, this international competition, but that seems to take a back seat for a large portion just so they can be like, and here's some silly bit here, and here's a thing over here, and what if we do this over here? But, like, it's not like they're steadily building toward the internationals. It's just that they keep talking about stuff.
It like, actually like, pops well, what up if out we of did nowhere. This,
or what if we do that, and we don't get to see that process and development of their show.
Before we wrap, we have to talk about Flo. Because Flo is hands down the worst character I've ever seen since the Star Wars girl in Dead Snow 2.
Who is Flo?
She is the Latina girl who says the worst lines I've ever heard. Like,
well, the thing is,
that character should have been like digitally removed from this movie at the end of
it. It's My Name is Earl shtick, where like, you know, the guys would complain about something and Catalina, who's like an illegal alien from, I think Mexico, it's been a really long time since I've watched My Name is Earl, so forgive me if I'm wrong, but and then she would be like, oh yeah, and then she would tell you some horrible thing that happened to her growing up and you're like, oh right, first world problems. So like, that's Flo's only joke. I didn't know her name at all, because why would you? Because her only thing is that someone says something and then she's like, that's like the time, and says something depressing that's supposed to be funny.
No one laughed in our theater.
A lot about this movie was I did like the girl at the head of Dash Sound Machine. The like mean German girl who's giant. I liked her. I thought she was genuinely funny, and I liked their weird, angry German
acapella.
I just
wish that they had like, I mean, I guess this is a bit of a spoiler. I wish they just kind of like wrapped things up between them and the Bellas a little more neatly. It's like, if you're going to approach a movie that way, at least like give me that good feel ending, and it's not. They're basically like the Icelanders from Mighty Ducks. That's what Dust Sound Machine is.
Yeah. But we don't even get that big moment of victory, because I don't think it's a spoiler to give away they're going to win. Of course they're going to fucking win, because they need they need a reason to make Pitch Perfect 3. But with like at the end, they win. It's like they finish performing and everybody's like, yay! And then it just cuts to them showing a photo of them having won. And you're like, we didn't see them get a trophy. We didn't see it get announced. And I was like, that is a really weird cut. Like, that we were robbed of the big moment that this, in theory, whole thing was building toward. And then they're all like, bye, Becca! See ya, freshman! The house is yours! And it's like, none of this makes any fucking sense.
Nope.
Alrighty. So, what's the verdict on this one? I think I know what you two are gonna say.
I'd skip it.
I'd say wait until it's on repeat on HBO and then catch it on a rainy day if you like the first one.
I think if you're a big fan of Pitch Perfect like I am, I recommend going to see it, because I think it's a lot of fun. And if it was on TV right now, honestly, I'd sit down and watch the whole thing again and probably have fun watching it. But it's not a good movie. So, I don't know. Take that however you want. On to the next one, Mad Max Fury Road. Christy is obviously getting that one.
Mad Max Fury Road. In a stark desert landscape where humanity is broken, two rebels just might be able to restore order. Max, a man of action in a few words, and Furiosa, a woman of action, who is looking to make it back to her childhood homeland. So, that's the big thing. The main thing is essentially that Furiosa, this bitch, played by Charlize Theron, is basically trying to whisk away the sex slaves of this really horrible tyrant named, like, his name is Joe, but it's like,
it's Immortan Joe.
Immortan Joe.
And he's basically played by the guy from, like, I guess the first Mad Max, or maybe the second one.
Yeah, basically he has these ladies who he bones strictly for breeding purposes and probably for pleasure too, but they're unfortunate ladies. And so they, it's about their escape. And like, that sounds like it would not be that interesting, especially because in the first 5 minutes of the movie, they're already out of his castle. So most of this is just happening. It's basically a 2.5 hour car chase, but it's fucking fun because George Miller created something that is unlike any action movie I've ever seen. It is operatic and it is big and it is inventive and it shows you so much crazy shit that, like, I mean, Angie and Perry can attest that normally when I see movies, I'm very kind of noisy. Like, I don't talk during movies. I just have a lot of feelings that are expressed through sound. This movie, I was very quiet just because I was literally just, like, awestruck of just...
I didn't even realize that until you just said that. You didn't make a peep the entire movie.
And it's not that I wasn't interested. It's just that I was, I actually realized afterwards I had stomach cramps because I had been like crunching up in anxiety and tension over watching what was happening, not realizing it. And then at the end, when I sat up, I was like, oh, I'm actually like, I had been doing abductor core muscles machines.
Yeah.
I walked out like kind of wiped out and drained because I think I sat there like this the entire time because it's really tense. And the production value of this movie is freaking through the roof. Like, I hope that someone at Warner Brothers is pointing at Marvel and laughing at all the money they spent on that shit.
Probably not, because you know Avengers Age of Ultron is still going to make more money, so I am Sadly. Pretty sure Marvel is going to get the last laugh there. Yeah, I mean, it was a movie after one action sequence, I was literally like, I feel like my pulse is racing, and then after the movie, I think we all felt like we had to like run in circles for a bit.
Angie actually progressively kept leaning forward and forward and forward in her seat, and by the end of the movie, you were like doubled over, like you were completely... Like, yeah, it was intense. It was a really good time. And on top of that,
but beyond that, it's really smart, too.
Yeah, it's a really great story because we were actually talking afterwards about how it's not your typical, like, oh, there's these poor girls and they need to be rescued. Like, no one in this movie is just a prop to be rescued. Everybody has, like, a full character. And it's really impressive to have an action movie that takes so much time on character. But where that pays off is in these moments of loss, like if someone dies or if a truck gets destroyed or if the people are catching up, you feel really fucking invested because you know all these characters.
I got distracted by cat.
Sorry, my cat just jumped on me. Anyway.
You know what else I really like is that they do all that story and character development with so little dialogue. They never just spell anything out.
It's a very visual movie, yeah. One of the things that I loved about this was they do a lot of character work, but it's not the way that a lot of movies do it where it's like through dialogue and like, you know, exposing their backstories and like getting to know them on that level. It's almost all just like sound and picture, and it's a story that's told in a way that you could really only tell it in movies, which I think is one of the things that was the most exciting about this. Like, it's an experience that I came away from being like, there's like no other medium that you could tell a story like this in this way. And so much of the credit for the character work goes to the actors too, who like they actually don't get that much backstory. I mean, I don't know if they had backstory off camera, but like in the movie itself, they don't get that much backstory. The movie tells you just enough. They don't get much dialogue, and thank God for that, because Tom Hardy, you could tell he's doing another one of his ridiculous accents, but we don't have to hear that much in this one. But just like the way that they look at each other, the like tiny reactions they have to everything that happens, like even the way they move, like all of that tells a story, and I love that. Like one example is like the wives, they're kind of like the pitch perfect characters in that they really just have like the one thing for each of them. But they did a better job than Pitch Perfect did of like explaining like who are these people, like what do they want, where are they going,
and like, they actually get arcs and like moments of doubt. Like there's one point where one of the girls is so freaked out by the threat of violence coming at them because they've escaped that she's like, well, if we go back he'll forgive us, and the other girls like have to like talk her down from that moment. And
that's one of the best payoffs in the entire film too.
Yeah, it has a great payoff. Like there are actually arcs to these things, and like it was something I just hadn't really seen before. I have seen the first Mad Max, but honestly it didn't make a huge impression on me, so I was kind of like, I walked into this one really not remembering a whole lot about that world, and it doesn't matter. I mean, like, this is enough of its own adventure that, you know, you can just enjoy it for face value, and the face value of it is that it's really exciting, but it also has this current in this story that has people energized, that has very serious film critics, not just our level of serious.
Talking about how Christy, I am an extremely serious film critic.
This is actually going to be my new shot when they ask for pictures for festivals for your ID. Oh my God. Going to be this. Huh? Everyone will love that. But yeah,
hey, the film's playing at Cannes. That's big, yeah. Fancy festival. Look at that.
Exactly. And it's like,
I think like, man. Madagascar 3 played at Cannes.
All right, that's fair. That's fair.
But the thing is, like, watching this movie, I thought that if the Oscars weren't so biased against genre, this would be an Oscar movie.
Oh, it God. This should get something for, like, the stunt work and the makeup and the costumes. Like,
but
everything
on top
in
of
this.
That, like, it absolutely deserves technical awards, but the emotional sweep of this film, like, I mean, it really did remind me of, like, Lawrence of Arabia or something, where it is a film of incredible scope.
I wouldn't be surprised if people are talking about this come award season, and there's some sort of like, will it get a nomination?
I think the Academy has their sticks firm up their asses.
I doubt it will ever get a nomination, but I guarantee you the web will be flooded with like, Mad Max should get this, and will it? And it won't, but it should.
It's so sad that action movies are undervalued, because this movie really does have some of the best action. Like, on top of it just being really exciting in the way that all of us just told you, like, you know, how we are physically reacting to it. It's shot, like, the way it's shot is so incredible. It's so incredibly clear. Like, you can actually tell what's going on. You can always tell, like, where everyone is relative to one another, like, where they're trying to go. Like,
which is incredible, considering how fast they're moving, how many people are involved, and how many vehicles are involved.
And also how many switching of people through vehicles is involved, but the geography is always sharp. And like I said, you still get these moments of character. When we talked about Avengers Age of Ultron, we talked about how, oh, they had action and they had character. What's really impressive in Mad Max Fury Road, you have both at the same time. Like,
it's
Nicholas Holt plays a character.
Action.
Yeah, like Nicholas Holt plays a character who is a war boy, which is basically kind of a minion of Imator. I can't say his name.
Immortan Joe.
Joe. And he
Donald
believes
Gleason.
Donald Gleason. Anyway, so but Nicholas Holt believes that if he dies in battle, he will win honor. And so he's very invested in his journey. And whenever he fails at something, you see him feel it. And it's really interesting. It's not a Nicholas Holt we've seen in other things. He's fucking terrifying at the start of this movie.
I'm back on Nicholas Holt train now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a Babadook turn for me, where like in the beginning you fucking hate that kid, and then toward the end you're like, oh, that poor kid. Like, he gets one of those, and it's really
exciting. I don't
know
if I ever hated him. I felt sorry for him at the beginning.
Oh, that
Babadook
kid.
Whereas then
I
started to root for him. But I think all the main performances here are like perfect. Well, I don't know. Maybe not so much Tom Hardy, I think, but like Nicholas Holt and Charlize Theron.
I thought
he was good, but like their level of losing themselves in their character is like another level. Like,
Charlize,
I still did see
guys.
A little Tom Hardy in Max.
Guys, Charlize, before we wrap up, we have to talk about Charlize Theron. She is incredible. Like, a lot of times whenever you see a woman who is slender playing an action hero, okay, a lot of times I have an issue because I feel like the fight choreography doesn't seem believable for the weight they have coming into it. But the fight choreography they give her makes sense. She is grounded in it. And even
it's
with like one and a half arms, she is a force to be reckoned with. She is terrifying. I mean, that's why I went out and bought this eyeshadow to do this today.
And that's
and
why Christy's going to wear it every
my
day.
My landlady
forward.
Saw this, and I don't know how to explain that.
That scene, that one fight scene, this isn't a spoiler because they released the clip, but that one fight scene between her, Tom Hardy, and Nicholas Holt, where they're kind of like chained together and wrestling to get the gun and the pipe, I mean, that's just incredible choreography there.
Yeah, it's like this, you know, the director George Miller has said this movie was 15 years in the making, and you feel every year of that in the best way possible, where everything
yes.
feels like it has a purpose and a point and a value to it, and it is a gorgeous movie. Like, it's not another one of those action movies that's just like, look how gritty we are. And it's weirdly, like, incredibly, like, I was describing it again as a movie with hairy balls. It is a very masculine movie, from like muscles to like guns and guitars and fire and blah, blah. But also, it's a fiercely feminist movie in its plotline and its concept that people should be people and not things, which, I mean, the fact that we need to make a movie that says that, but, like, it's amazing. George Miller has made a masterpiece, and you should absolutely go out and see it. I don't care who you are.
I think I'll second that.
I have nothing to add. Yes, agreed on all counts.
Was
Unsung
anyone
hero,
surprised
the
I
guy
liked
on the
it?
Guitar. The guy with the guitar on that. I think that was one of my favorite little features there.
I think in a literal sense, he is not an unsung hero. He probably does the most singing out of anyone.
Oh, look, they have something in common, Pitch Perfect 2 and Mad Max.
They both involve music.
Who's
they
gonna
both
do a Mad Max this weekend?
Song.
Actors.
All right, so thumbs up for Mad Max and one thumb up for Pitch Perfect. And it's like a sideways thumb. Anyway, that is a wrap on episode 66 of Popcorn and Prosecco. Thank you guys so much for watching. You can catch us all over the place. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on YouTube. We have our Facebook page, where it would be great if you could like us. You could talk to us at Popcorn Prosecco on Twitter. And we are also on iTunes, where you should rate and comment. And then the three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, you want to go first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
I'm at Christy Puchko on Twitter, and I write for all over the internet, but you can find me at decadentcriminals.com, where I post career highlights. And just a shout out, I'm recapping Game of Thrones for spinoff, so check that out every Monday.
I'm going to have to, otherwise I won't understand what's going on. And you can catch my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is at PNemroff. So thanks again for watching, and we'll see you next week.
lovely, lovely day.
Nicholas Holt did a better job of saying it.
I think so.
He did.
Oh, what a day! What a lovely day!